Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Sober Awakening Podcast. I am Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening. And I am here today with my new friend, Shannon Toner. And Shannon is the founder of her own nonprofit. It is called Protect Her.
Yes.
Incorporated. So Shannon comes to us from a very interesting background. I found Shannon on TikTok, and Shannon talks all about her commitment to sobriety, her passion for what she does with her nonprofit, and her spiritual practices. And those three things combined really caught my interest because she is a young lady with a vision who has decided it is time to go all in on her nonprofit work. You told me you are... do you want to disclose your age, Shannon, or no?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Go for it.
I'm not afraid of the number. It's 32.
32. And I was telling you before we started, I wish I was as ambitious as you are. As ambitious as you are at 32, I wish I was when I was 32. However, people who have been following Sober Awakening might know I was pretty deep into the bottle when I was in my 30s. So I would have never been able to put this whole thing together. So kudos to you, my new friend. So what do you have to say to introduce yourself to the Sober Awakening world?
I'm excited to be here. I feel like you
so far
for the same reason. Yeah. And I think it's really cool. I think naturally when you're on a sober journey, you find spirituality and other things because it just opens up your life and your mind to so many things that you weren't experiencing because you were either in the bottle or somewhere else. So I really like what you're doing too. I think that it really is a mindset and a lifestyle. And I think it's cool that we get a second real chance at it.
Absolutely. So Shannon, let me ask you this. First of all, your nonprofit, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it started because when I was 15, I got menstrual toxic shock, which I know you said you aren't familiar with. So I can.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. And I'm not sure as far as the audience and whoever's viewing or listening, we're not really going to be dwelling on menstrual toxic shock. Yeah. All right. I mean, we'll touch on a little bit of what it is at the end here. If any of the ladies or gentlemen out there who are listening or watching this are interested in Shannon and what she brings to the world and want to talk more about this stuff, we'll let you know where to find her. But at a 30,000 foot level, though, please, I just kind of cut you off there. But
yeah,
I wanted to kind of set the pace on that one because I was like, well, huh, how is this going to fit in? But we'll get there.
So I had, you know, painful periods and mental issues after I got menstrual toxic shock. So depression being the worst one, which is what started my drinking career 6 years before I planned because I was a perfectionist and liked to plan things. So I thought that once I was 21, that's when I was going to do it because that's when you're allowed to. So instead, I started at 15 to deal with that near-death experience. And yes.
Ooh, so, did I see that on your you have an NDE. Oh, we are so going there. I did not know that. Oh, bonus. All right. Cool.
So I was in a coma from that experience, 50-50 chance to live. And afterwards, they wanted to put me on just a laundry list of prescription medication for ADHD, depression, there was memory loss. And my parents didn't allow that. I think probably given our family history of addiction, they just were really nervous that it was a really, like, I was at a vulnerable age and whatever. But I should have been given other support and I wasn't. And I don't know if subconsciously I wasn't planning on drinking in high school because I saw what my family was doing, even though I didn't really get it. But so anyway, I fixed or tried to fix my depression and whatnot with that experience through drinking. And I started drinking a lot in high school and it just never really got better. I always thought like when I was older, I would stop. You know, once I was like ready to settle down, I would stop. And then the years just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And I had so many different like experiences, and I definitely have a lot of guardian angels that are probably like glad they can kick their feet up a little bit more right now. So all that to say, the painful periods persisted. And I went down a Reddit rabbit hole trying to figure out the connection between painful periods and menstrual toxic shock. Figured out that it was not menstrual toxic shock, which is what I always thought that it was because of, and that it could be fixed through lifestyle and exercise and diet change and everything. So I enlisted the coaches of like a menstrual health coach, a homeopath, and really got my periods down to pretty painless within a year, whereas doctors were prescribing like surgeries and, you know, going in and, you know, people are getting hysterectomies over it. So I then came to the realization that a lot of people are dealing with this regardless of having menstrual toxic shock, which is, you know, it's, I don't know, I don't want to say it's rare, but it's rare to get it as bad as I did. And so I started a nonprofit to focus on providing that education to youth earlier so that we learn about the menstrual cycle, which is also really a way of life. It's very like, so it's just funny how I see sobriety and learning about the menstrual cycle like very similar in that like it's more of a way of life and how to live optimally.
So it's interesting you mentioned this, and now that I'm thinking about it, you know, we're talking about the menstrual cycle, which I, of course, being a male, don't have, I'm not intimately familiar with. However, yeah. I've been around it enough with a wife and a 23-year-old daughter. One of my spiritual mentors who I've been working with over the years is a female, and she's highly intuitive and had her own near-death experience. I went to high school with her, but she focuses a lot on spiritual regulation around in the body around the menstrual cycle. She talks about that quite a bit, not where it's concerned with me, but some of the groups I participate in when she's addressing some of the females, they'll kind of talk about that a little bit. I kind of tune out at that point, but I'm kind of like half listening, half not. But so anyway, that just a little bit of an aside. So I want to back up, though. Let's go initially into your menstrual toxic shock experience, your coma, and your near-death experience. Let me ask you, were you drinking prior to that?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So you're just a kid. Did you say 15?
Yes, I was going into my sophomore year of high school.
Okay, so you're 15 and you experienced this toxic shock due to the menstrual cycle and what it be tampons or yeah. something like that. So tell me about, you know, without getting into too much detail, like what occurred, how did you get sick? And then if you can share a little bit about that NDE, I think the people listening and are watching would love that.
Yeah. So I was traveling to California where I live now. I'm from Massachusetts. We were on a family vacation and I just immediately got sick once we landed and we just thought it was jet lag because I was tired. And I woke up and just exhibited flu-like symptoms. So like vomiting, all of that thing, fever, whatnot. We were visiting family. We were visiting my aunt and uncle who have kids around my age. So they brought me to the pediatrician that they use. Got a shot for the nausea and was sent home, didn't get better. had to be carried in the second time because at that point I couldn't walk and I just like collapsed on the ground. And that's when they figured out that my heart rate was really high, my blood pressure was really low. So then they rushed me to the ICU where I was in a coma. So I was in a coma for like 2 or 3 days. I don't remember any of that. So I know a lot of people say that they have like memories from coma or like waking up or anything like that. Like I don't have any recollection of that. I know that just based on what my mom tells me, during that coma, they were going to give me a spinal tap that I didn't need because they thought it was meningitis. So I was like, I mean, my aunt and uncle were the ones that figured out that I had menstrual toxic shock once they found out that I was on my period. But like the doctors had no idea. And I probably wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for my aunt and uncle. And so I woke up, I wear contacts, I have really bad eyesight. And so for me, like the coming to, I was just in a hospital bed, it was pitch black. I didn't have my contacts in, so I couldn't see anything. And I just like click that red button that's like in your bed. And then a nurse came over and didn't really tell me what was going on still yet. And then the following day I had like a million doctors in white long lab coats with clipboards wanting to ask me questions because like what I had went through was so crazy and they never see that. So I don't have like a ton of recollection or any like, I don't know that like the brain activity was there while I was in a coma, but afterwards, like, I mean, that chunk of memory is kind of just gone. And memory then on is also a little fuzzy, I would say. Like, but you could also argue that I was drinking and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to say. But, and you could also, like, I have no idea if I was predisposed to a lot of the mental issues that I had afterwards. Like, would those have come out later in life? I don't know. It's really hard for me to decipher, like, did I have this before? I don't remember having it before. I remember being, I grew up Catholic, like everything, just kind of very typical of like what you would see, aside from like the family history of a lot of addiction.
Okay. So when you say near-death experience, you almost died, but you didn't have an experience where you crossed over and met anybody or anything like that?
No.
Okay. So you, so in other words, when you say near death, you mean you just almost died in a coma, yeah. But you have no recollection of anything that went on in the coma or anything. No. Okay. So you come out of the coma, and what did life look like in recovery? Where did the drinking come in? You know, how did that all start?
And
where did it go? How bad did it get?
So I've gotten stitches while drinking. I've definitely, I've passed out in places I shouldn't have passed out. It started right after that experience, really. I started going out, and for me, it was a way to, I just felt really isolated. So I didn't tell anybody that this happened to me because at that age, periods were still pretty stigmatized, as they still kind of are. And I was really embarrassed. I thought that people would think it was gross that I got that. I didn't tell anybody. So also to my friends, it looked like I did a full 180 because like I said, I did not drink. I was the friend who actually didn't get invited out sometimes because they knew I wasn't going to drink. So they didn't want me there. Yeah. And and then all of a sudden I'm, you know, drinking everything. And like, I remember one of my friends, you know, I was like drinking before a high school basketball game or something. And they were just like, Shannon, we were going to come over and like have like a beer or something. Like you can't, like I would just like, then it was like the opposite, like going from not being invited because you're not going to drink to like not being invited because you're drinking too much. Uh-huh. So I didn't want to go to college, ended up going to the college that accepted me that was as far away from home as possible because my drinking got me bullied. And like, not that I think bullying was okay. I mean, I'm not proud of my behavior. But like older girls didn't like that I was at parties. So then I would get bullied and then that would just make my drinking worse. So I wanted to get as far away from home as possible. Went to a really big party school. ended up transferring, went to another big party school. So I wish I could go back and redo college because I really do enjoy learning. And I just did not, I wasn't there for the right reasons. I'll say that.
Right.
And afterwards, but I always did fine in school. I didn't do great. I could have done a lot better. And after school, it didn't really come up because I worked for my mother at her real estate company. And like I said, my family has addiction issues and we never really recognized issues in this is all like from my perspective, you know. Everything was always fine, you know, like as long as it looks good from the outside, it doesn't really matter what's happening on the inside. And so I, you know, just went along and like was doing well. I was very much like work hard, play hard type of person. Right. And then it really started to show up when I left working for my mom and I was in finance. And I just got into some relationships that made me realize, like, what am I doing to attract this? Mm-hmm. And it took a few tries before I really was like, something has to change. And I used to pick who I would date based on how they would party. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
Like
I mean there are people who I dated before I met my wife who I would not, very nice girls and everything, but unless they partied a certain way, I just wasn't interested.
Yeah,
not too much. Well, I was too much, but I mean, you know what I mean. I was not going to date somebody who didn't drink. You had to go out and like to enjoy yourself. Yes. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was not going to date anybody that didn't drink. And I thought that people that were sober were really weird. I thought that that was like, and I have uncles that, they're technically great uncles. I've never seen drink. They were just always sober. And it never really like put two and two together for me, I guess, growing up, that they could have been really bad alcoholics, which they were. And that's why they stopped around the same age that I am. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I it's funny, all of the things that just kind of like went right over my head. And now that I'm sober, I'm like, oh, this is all adding up and making sense. But my last relationship, it was a combination of things. I wouldn't say it was just the relationship. It was also my job. It was also that I had started to work on fixing my periods, which made me take a closer look at my lifestyle and my health. And I just the last weekend that I drank I didn't decide that same weekend to stop drinking. It was 2 weeks later when I was on one of my typical breaks.
Okay. And how long ago was that? How old were you?
So I stopped drinking in November of 2023. Okay. So I was 31.
Gotcha.
And I was on vacation with my boyfriend at the time, and I blacked out or browned out every single weekend. And there was just tension with like people there. And I remember waking up and being like, you don't act that way when you're sober. And like I kind of had something to prove, you know? So I was the like last day or so of the vacation, I didn't drink. And then we went home and I was like, I'm going to go on one of my breaks. And I would do that. If there was ever like a bad weekend, I would take a break from drinking and think that that was like good.
Right.
And yeah. It was 2 weeks later, I had come home from going out with my brother and I hadn't drank. And it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. And I know it's really funny thinking about it now that this option never crossed my mind until this moment. It just hit me. It was like 3 a.m. I was getting ready to go to bed. And I was like, I could just not drink like ever again. I was like, I just went out and I didn't drink. I could just not drink. And that's the only time that that has ever crossed my mind. And I have not drank since. Well, I haven't drank since the 2 weeks before that. But And again, I was still dating that person who, like, I don't want to label other people, but like drank a lot and continued to date him. And I think in the beginning, it was like that relationship sort of helped me get through it because I felt like I was like, had something to prove, you know? Like I was like, okay, cool. Like I can stand my ground and I can still not drink and like hang out with you and whatever. And, you know, no hard feelings with that relationship ending right. or anything, but I do think it was helpful. Like, I know that that doesn't last forever, like staying sober to prove a point or something. I don't feel that way anymore. But in the beginning, I do think I was like, I'm taking a stance. And I was hanging out with a lot of people that liked to party at the time. And so I felt really strong in taking that stance. I see it very differently now, but I do think that that was like helpful. So however it got me sober, it was helpful.
Excellent. So you didn't have any really big catastrophic thing happen. You just kind of were like, you got tired of drinking and you're just like,
I've hit cars.
Okay. So things were happening. Not any one big thing.
I didn't feel many consequences, I would say.
Right. You never had like an intervention or you never ended up in the hospital?
Well, I got stitches once.
Okay.
And in college, I had a group of friends did pull me aside after like a night and they were like, what are you doing?
Gotcha.
I've been uninvited from big events that I was very much going to because of my drinking. So it was like, I never had like one, like wrap my car around a pole or like something like that. But there was definitely,
there were things. There were things adding up. So, but that was, you quit drinking in, did you say November of 2023?
Yes.
Yes. So you are coming up on, you're right around a year and a half, right? If I'm doing my math correctly.
Yeah.
Congratulations on being in that 1 year. That's awesome. I think that going back into my sobriety memory, I always say the first year is the hardest because you've got all of those firsts. You know, it's the first time you're going to have all the holidays sober. It's the first, it's the first time you're just going to do a lot of things. It's the first time you're going to have to face a lot of the people you're close to. And they're going to ask, well, why aren't you drinking? Why isn't, you know, Shannon usually has XYZ to drink. Why, hey, Shannon, you want to drink? No, you're not. And some people are like, oh my God, awesome. Some people are like, they're almost like, wait a second, you have to drink with me because you gave them permission to feel better about themselves. So you're going through all of that in your first year. So congrats on hitting that milestone. I love that. You know, you hit that 1 year point, 2 years, even 3 years to where it's like going out into an ocean, right? On a boat and you're watching the shore go away and that's your old drinking life. And it's exciting to watch it get smaller and smaller, but then it's gone after that first year or two. And you're looking out in this ocean and you're like, I can't see what else is out there. You know, what's ahead of me. And that's either scary or for some people it's boring. And so in those type instances, they're scared or they're bored. They'll go and they'll, you know, go back to their old habits and start drinking again. And what I found through AA and then not AA and then going back to church and then not, the whole spiritual growth thing really, really can take off at that point in time. And as you cultivate those spiritual abilities, I believe your life's purpose will begin to unfold in front of you, even though you can't see that shoreline that's over the horizon, metaphorically, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, so, I like that metaphor.
So let me ask you, your sobriety, now you've also put some material out there on your spiritual awakening and spiritual development. When did that begin and how has that progressed for you?
Oh, so like I mentioned, I grew up Catholic. So
yeah, me too.
Been spiritual, working on kind of, I stepped away from like the Catholicism and I felt like I was rebelling because my whole family is really Catholic. And I dipped into more of like the, you know, calling on the universe rather than God. And, and now I'm trying to like mend the two. So it's always it's always been there. I have had more than a few moments where God has quite literally intervened with me. And it's just really wild to think about. And so I'll share one with you if you want to hear.
Yeah, please. So, yes.
This was maybe 6 months, maybe a year before I stopped drinking. 6 months to a year. I can't really remember. I think it was a year. And I was living in Boston at the time. I was working at finance, still drinking, all that stuff. But I was recognizing that like something was wrong. I had just quit vaping, like cigarettes. And that sort of started my like trickle off of different things. I was also prescribed Adderall for ADHD. So that was like a role in my sobriety. And quitting vaping highlighted how bad my anxiety was. And so I was home this weekend, and I have a history of also not being able to express a need unless I am under the influence. And so this would also show up in relationships and everything. So I was pretty high on weed when I like was talking to my mom. We're sitting in the parking lot of we're going to go shopping at Home Goods. And I just break down to her. I'm like bawling my eyes out. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Like talking about life. Like I have a history of self-harm. And one night I self-harmed again for the first time in a really long time. I was really drunk, and that scared the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. And I went back to that, you know, habit, and I didn't know why. And that just made me really nervous that I was like, okay, I'm obviously out of control. Like I just need help. And I remember specifically saying that I need a white squishy room. Like I just had enough. And in the middle of all of this, a woman comes over and she knocks on my mom's like car window. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what the hell? Like, can't you see I'm crying? Like, whatever. And my mom rolls down the window and she recognizes her and she's like, oh my God, hi. Like, how are you? And she's like, oh, hey. Like, so they catch up for a minute and she's like, Colleen, I'm really, it's my mom's name. She's like, I feel really weird doing this. My husband's sitting in the car right over there, and he saw you guys, and he said that he needed to come over and talk to your daughter, that he was getting a really, really strong message from God. And when I looked over and I saw that it was you, I told him, like, let them be. Like, I know her. I used to work with her. Like, just let them have their conversation. And he looked at me and he said, it's such a strong message. I will not leave this parking lot unless I can give the message to that girl. Like, she needs it. And so she was like, okay, well, let me go over because I know her. She was like, would you mind if he came over and talked to you? And I'm sitting there and like, hi, I'm like breaking down and I'm like, what do I have to lose at this point? I'm like, sure. And he came over and I kid you not, like prayed in that parking lot for me for like the next 10 minutes and said, whatever you're going through, you're going to get through it. You're going to be okay. I know that it's really hard right now, but like the messages that I'm getting is like, you're going to be fine. And we did not go shopping at Home Goods after that because I was like, what the hell? But right. That was like the craziest, like just so crazy to me. And it sent a few messages to me.
I love that though. I love it. Yeah. I'm sorry, but yeah, I love that.
Yeah. It was really, really a really wild experience. And like my whole family is religious. They've all had different experiences like that. And to me, the message it sent was like, you're kind of on your own, but like God's walking with you. Because I think I knew that like my family wasn't going to get me actual help just based on like the history of how things went in my family. And that was true. Like me and my mom never talked about it again and never talked about like if I needed help again. And so I just was like, okay, like guess I'm going to be good. But like it's on me to figure it out. And it took another year of me weaning off and on of Adderall and then eventually stopping drinking and whatever.
I think that's interesting that this gentleman in the parking lot was getting messages from God. I don't care how you want to term any of it, whether you call it God, universe, source, creator. God never said, call me God. It's just there's, you know, one ultimate unifying source, energy, power, consciousness out there. And, you know, growing up Catholic as we did, or in our Western Christian, many of our Western Christian faiths, how many times are we taught to pray in different ways, go to church, pray, and it's always, God, thank you. God, I need this. God, thank you. God, I need this. Prayer over, you know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the end.
Yeah.
Never are we taught in religion class or whatever it might be, never are we taught to take 5 minutes, sit down, quiet our mind, and listen to what God, the universe, creator, source, says back.
Yeah.
And that is what it's all about. That is where we are missing the boat. Yeah. And I have come to a point where I don't care if you call it God, Mother, Source, Creator, Universe, whatever. I don't care whether you call them angels, spirit guides, off-world beings, whatever people want to call them. You know, there are other good points of consciousness and energies out there that are always watching out for you. And this man, he calls it God. He wants to talk. He had a divine connection right there. And with my spiritual development, and I hope people, more people embrace this, is whatever you want to call things, that ability to listen to the direction of God or source, whatever you want to call it, it dwells within each one of us. We just have to learn how to listen to it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And once we do that, then you start being guided in the coolest, absolute coolest ways. And you're smiling because I think with, if I know enough about your story now, that's what you've decided to do. You've decided to start listening to that inner voice. But before we get into that, with your spiritual development, you said you are at a point where you are in church and then now you're trying to, you were calling on the universe. Now you're trying to marry the two worlds. What are you doing currently? What's your practice? What do you like to do? Do you like to, you know, go to church every Sunday? Do you like to sit home and play with tarot cards and pendulums? Do you like, you know, whatever, you know?
Yeah. I have not gone back to church. I do plan to at some point, I think, especially with the new like perspective and mindset, it would be really good for me. I'm just not there yet. I do love oracle cards. Mm-hmm. I'm a big journaler. So I've always been a big journaler, practicing meditation. And I'm also starting, so I journaled. I obviously like used to pray as a young kid and still journaled. I think I like came out the womb journaling, but I've started to write letters to God, which has been helpful and just healing that relationship. And I think I can recognize that a lot of it has to do with, you know, probably, I don't want to say blaming God, but like associating God with things that I have that I don't love about childhood or stuff like that. And since, you know, my parents are the ones that made me go to church and like do the things. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you've heard this before, and I know this is something that I am working on. Like once I got to a certain age, I started viewing God as like that therapist that your parents hire, but they're going to tell your parents everything that you say. Mm-hmm. And so I started to kind of distance myself because I was like, well, I don't think I can trust you. Okay. And I know that that's not true. And I know that that's not what's happening, but that's something that I'm working on overcoming and knowing that like I have my own relationship with that higher power. Mm-hmm. And so also just calling on like both, like I would love to incorporate the God aspect, like the singular versus universe, which I see as more of like life in general. It's not so mm-hmm. much, it's more of like, you know, which path are you going to take? Whereas I see God as like a higher power, as someone that you can have more of a conversation with and get maybe a response. Whereas universe, I feel like it's almost like I speak it out and they'll show me in ways, but not words, if that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah, no, I have gotten to a point in my meditation practice and with trying to develop my own intuitive abilities and listening to the things that come in back to me when I'm in meditation. Sometimes I've heard voices in my head, and other times it's just a knowing that I can't really put words to, and I can understand things, but I can't really explain them. Mm-hmm. So whether you're looking at, for instance, quantum physics, right? Or you're reading some new age spiritual text, you're going to hear the term, or you're going to hear it said that time doesn't really exist, right? And the past, present, and future are all right now. And that is a really hard concept to explain and for a lot of people to wrap their minds around. I've gotten to a point where in meditation, I understand it. I believe it. I get it. If you ask me to explain it to you or put it into words, because words are so imperfect, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I know it's real. I know it's true. I understand it, but I can't explain how or why I understand it. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you love Oracle cards.
I do.
And you haven't gone back to church. What else? Because you mentioned meditation. And what got me really cooking on the whole spiritual thing is once I got sober for a few years, I was going back to Catholic church every week, right? And I was a good Catholic boy again. But I did get a job. And it was based out there in LA, the home office. And, you know, we have these wellness programs and everything. And if you participate in the wellness programs, you get a certain amount of money every year off of your health insurance. And so you have to get on this app and do these different things. And one of the offerings to build up some points was you had to meditate every day for 10 minutes for a month. And I was like, okay, what the hell? I can get on an app. They gave one of the mainstream meditation apps. I can get on. I can plug in for 10 minutes. I can listen to somebody tell me to breathe, relax, whatever, for 30 days straight. So I did that. And oh my God, oh, something just kicked in. Something took hold. And I started feeling so much more connected. And since then, I've explored a lot of different things. I do earthing. I do breath work. I, you know, still do the meditation. I talk to my higher self regularly, you know, which I call, you can call it the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. So that's kind of how I went about it. And it took me out of church for a while. But now I've gone back to church. I've gone every Sunday for almost 2 months now because I'm being called to do it. But I feel like I'm being called to go back to church and look at it through the eyes of oneness as opposed to duality. Mm. So what else? What else are your favorite practices right now? You like oracle cards? You meditate? Anything else out there?
I live by the beach. I always say like getting in nature.
Yeah.
I do like breath work. I don't do that enough on my own.
I don't either, but
I really like group breath work. There's who I believe he's sober. John Crinetti, maybe. I don't know his exact name, but I like his breath work sessions. Really just journaling has always been something that I always do, like manifesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have a lot of success with manifesting, and I don't know, like you could probably call that, maybe there's other names for it, but like for me, it's manifesting. And then also just like affirmations.
Absolutely. So, well, that's the perfect segue into what you're doing now. You're manifesting this dynamic nonprofit. So you've taken us through your drinking career. You've talked about your spiritual practice and the evolution of that. And what made you decide to take the leap from finance, correct?
Yeah. You went
real estate, finance, and now you said, forget about it. I'm moving to the West Coast. I'm going to be a California girl, and I am going to go all in on this nonprofit. What the heck are you doing?
You are
crazy, according to some people.
I know. And it's really not that out of character for me. So this is not my first time moving across country. I've also moved to Asia before. So, and I've changed careers. I've also have, I've taught in between finance and real estate. But I think it was a whole combination of things. So I could have stayed at finance. I also could have gone back to real estate, which is what I was debating doing. I also could have worked for my last boyfriend and do my nonprofit on the side. And I could have done it on the side with like all of those, except for really finance. I would have had to report it to finance. And I just don't think it would have been I don't think I would have been able to give it as much attention. And so to me, I was at a concert and maybe spirit talked to me through Nicki Minaj because I was at a Nicki Minaj concert. But I decided all of this when I was at a Nicki Minaj concert. I had already planned to leave finance, but I didn't know where I was going. And I was going to.
And you were sober. You were sober. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. I did shrooms then.
Okay.
I don't anymore, but okay. I feel like I should mention that. So
that's good to clarify. So yeah. When's the last time you did not do mind altering substance whatsoever?
The last mind altering almost a year ago.
A year ago? Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You know what? It's interesting within the spiritual community though, you'll find people who swear off booze. But then you'll find people who do, you know, they do not, well, some swear by it, but some will advocate for the use of psilocybin and, you know, especially ayahuasca journeys are a big deal, Things like that. With my addictive personality, that is something that I don't feel I can ever try. You know, if you do a good breath work session, that gets you pretty high right there. That's crazy amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. I'll do breath work and I'll be like after some of the breath holds and then the releases and everything, I'll be like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, too bad this can't last forever. But, you know, that's about as far as I go with it now. But sorry. So you were at Nicki Minaj and you were, you know, you had a few mushrooms, but, you know, you were open to the universe speaking to you.
Yeah.
And
I was really close. I was in the second row. And I was, like I said, I was kind of juggling between three different job opportunities, one being with that boyfriend. And she was just saying something like in between her songs. And it's going to sound crazy. I'll probably sound like a wacky person when I say this, but we were like not having the greatest time that evening. And she just said something and she looked me in the eye when she said it. And she was like, "You don't need a man to define you." And to me, it was like,
Nicki Minaj, looking right at you, looking at Shannon, saying, you don't need a man.
And I was like, I took that as a message. I was like, why am I going to quit a really hot, like very well-known finance firm to go work for my boyfriend at the time to still put my nonprofit second? And I was like, I don't. And like you know, the relationship wasn't where I wanted it to be anyway. And in that moment, I was like, well, if I want to put my nonprofit first and I don't want to work for him, then I don't really want to move to stay with him. And I'm really being called to California, which is actually where I got menstrual toxic shock. And so all in that night, I was like, I think I'm just going to move to California and pursue it full time and not take any of these jobs. And so a week later, I quit my finance job, broke up with that boyfriend. And then a month later, I drove me and my dog across country. And we have been here ever since.
Very nice. Very nice. So you went all in. And how I commend you for that. Because if you do listen to a lot of the mainstream spiritual teachers right now out there, you're going to hear a lot of them say, follow your passion, follow your calling. Don't worry so much. Don't do anything stupid, right? Like don't go max out $50,000, $100,000 in credit cards and take out stupid debt. But you know what? Don't worry about the money. I mean, be prudent, but don't worry about everything. As long as you are following your passion, the universe will support you in ways that you can't even see coming. You know, stay present in the moment. Do what you want to do right now for what you feel is your greatest good, what excites you the most, and everything falls into line. And the more I do that, I believe it. I'm just so damn bad at trusting in that because, you know, we're so programmed. It is. We're so programmed into you should do this, you should do that. If you don't have every last thing planned out for you in your life, then, you know, then you're doing something wrong. And I literally, I mean, I'm just the typical, you know, limiting belief guy. I was born in the 70s. My father worked for a large company. He was in middle management. I went to college. I got a business degree. In the 1990s, I got out and I did marketing and then fundraising. And then now I do, you know, I'm in the medical sales arena, but I'm like very much in that you have to do this, you have to do this. But I limit myself because from what I saw when I was younger, this is staying in here in this box is normal. And to be a good member of society, you need to stay in this box. And if you get outside of the box and you don't plan and you aren't careful and, you know, you throw caution to the wind for the future, then you're not doing a good job. But then all the spiritual people come along and they say, forget about the future. Don't be stupid, but go for it, you know, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, I know. And then the other layer is you have to also put your like blinders on to all of the people that are worried for you for going outside the box, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of spiritual people say just go with it and trust.
Absolutely. So how's that working out for you now, though, that you've been doing this for what, maybe a year almost now or whatever?
Not even a year. Because I registered it in
8 months, maybe. Yeah. I looked. Okay.
Because I moved here 8 months ago.
Okay, that's where I'm getting
like a month or two. So it really feels six-ish, but it's going really well. I moved and I manifested my move, which was a really crazy thing too. I like was writing in my journal and I was being too specific, and then I wrote a new manifestation that was a little more vague, and then that same week someone reached out to me for where I live.
Right. And just for clarification to the listeners out there, when you are journaling and you're writing, you're visioning your life. Yeah. Sometimes when you say you're getting too specific, you're trying to tell God or the universe or whoever it might be how you want it to happen instead of what state you want to be in. And sometimes when we tell the universe how we want it to work, like how we want to get from A to B, that it doesn't work. You've got to visualize and see yourself in the state of having gone to point B, but the journey from A to B, if you start telling it how it's going to do what it does, that's when it's like, doesn't work like that. So is that what you're talking about when you said you were getting too specific?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I live in Marina Del Rey and I was putting like my apartment in Santa Monica. I just wanted to be near the beach. So I shifted it and said my sun-drenched home near the beach. And I don't live in an apartment. I do live in a home and I live near Santa Monica, but I'm a block from the beach.
Yes. So based on your TikToks, I like what you showed your home there. It looks very nice.
Yeah.
You had a TikTok, I think, the other day where you were showing the light coming in or something like that.
Yeah, we have really big windows in the front. Yeah. So I instead of being like too specific, because I think that sometimes can hold you back, pulling more of like the qualities. So like I knew I wanted a sunny home and I knew I wanted to be near the beach. It didn't matter where really, you know, because I'm working for myself from home. So, and then I've met a lot of incredible people that I really don't believe I would have met in Massachusetts. The mindset out here and just the wellness focus is really amazing. I've had different volunteer opportunities and just like networking with the right people. So I feel like it was definitely the right move. Knowing me, I won't be here forever because I just love moving.
Well, from what I know about you so far from this conversation, you're going to be exactly where you need to be when you need to be there.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like you're and sounds like you're very opening to that. So would you say right now you are truly happy and living your best life?
I would. Yeah. I shouldn't have hesitated. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That is so awesome. I asked my guests when they come on, there are people who are going to see this or listen to it, and they're going to say, oh man, I love what Shannon did. I wish I had her courage, and I wish I see her smile, and I love this, and I love the whatever she's doing, she had the courage to go do it and break out of her addictive, bad, defeating patterns and just go take it. She's happy now. How do I get that life? How do I be like Shannon? If there is one practical thing you could impart on any of the viewers / listeners out there, what would it be to kind of break your cycle and go for it?
We're talking about getting sober, right?
How about the courage to, once you're sober, the courage to follow your passion and follow your dreams?
Okay. So for me, I think to hear it first is like the one thing that you need to harness. Like what we talked about is learning how to like recognize and listen to that inner voice, which I think we really can only get by sitting with ourselves and getting really quiet. And to me, a lot of the choices that I've made, I don't mean this in a selfish way. Like I don't think about other people, because sometimes you get too many opinions. So that's why I think being by yourself is really helpful, to hear what you truly want and try and think about it regardless of what your mom wants, what your dad wants, what society thinks you should do. And then once you have it, if it's the courage piece that's scaring you, I would think about what would be worse, like if you don't do it. And what if someone goes out and does what you wanted to do? Like for me, there's not many, like there, I don't know really any other nonprofit that's doing what I'm doing, a lot more focused on like period poverty. And I would be so upset if I saw in 5 years someone going and successfully doing it because I didn't take the risk.
Yeah.
So I would weigh those.
Yeah. You know what I would throw out there? I've heard it said many times that the universe, God, whatever we want to call it, gives us these ideas when we want them, but then it's our job to act on them. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who calls it inspired action, and yeah. You have to know when to take it. You will be given an abundance of ideas as you go throughout life. And it's just the universe or God just saying to you like, okay, here's this opportunity. Here's this one. And so many just pass us by because we don't take it. And you realize that. And that's the beautiful thing about it. So I'm going to kind of wrap up here. But I want to thank you for being with us. You are just such a ray of light. I love your story. But now a little bit about you and what you're doing. I want to give you the opportunity to just say something about your nonprofit. Because Sober Awakening is a nonprofit, I do feel like we have to disclaimer ourselves here, and we have to say we have no financial relationship whatsoever. However, what you've done in your life very much is in alignment with the mission of Sober Awakening and becoming sober, developing your spiritual intuitive abilities, and then having the courage to follow your true passion and bring more light to the world. So with your nonprofit, what is it and how are you bringing light to the world, and where can they find you if they're looking for more?
Yeah. So our website is just www.protectherinc.com, and all of our socials are on there. You can find resources and reach out if you want to chat more. And we are providing menstrual health education to youth, so that way they can stay connected to their bodies and just have more confidence, better body literacy, health literacy, and overall an optimal, healthy well-being.
That is cool. So everybody, that's where you can find Shannon and what she's doing. And I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. You have anything else you want to say there, Shannon, before we sign off?
No, I don't think so. This is great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for being here with us. And best luck to you and everything you do. And I'm so glad that you are here and I can call you a new friend. Yeah. And I love what you're doing in the world. All right.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Well, thank you. And we will see everybody next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening Podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.